Hello and welcome to the Global Energy Transition Podcast, presented by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung European Union and the Global Energy Transition Blog. I am your host, Michael Buxbaum, energy photojournalist and lead blogger for theenergytransition.org, recording here in the heart of Madrid's Malasaña district. As we wrap up this podcast, the good news has come across that in 2023, Germany produced more than half its electricity from renewables, showing that as more renewables come online, we can hopefully reduce overall CO2 emissions. And with emissions from oil and gas rising at the recently concluded COP28 in Dubai, one strategy which got tremendous attention, in fact, the preferred and promoted strategy by the fossil fuels industry to combat climate change, is to capture a significant amount of those emissions either before they go into the atmosphere or directly from the atmosphere, and then somehow, somewhere, store that CO2 underground or offshore, perhaps forever. This concept of capturing CO2 before it goes up into the atmosphere, often from point sources, is called carbon capture and sequestration, or carbon capture and storage, or in short, CCS. At COP28, the conference's president, who also serves as CEO for the Abu Dhabi National Oil and Gas Company, or ADNOC, along with 50 other industry executives, signed the Oil and Gas Decarbonization Charter. This charter focuses on using CCS to, quote, abate or divert CO2 from going to the atmosphere without necessarily stopping the burning of fossil fuels, which causes these CO2 emissions in the first place. Signatories of this pledge pledged to reach net zero by 2050 for their operations by using, quote, low-carbon technologies like carbon capture and utilization and storage, or CCUS, with the U, like I said, standing for utilization, or maybe they will use instead low-carbon hydrogen, aka hydrogen made from fossil gas with CO2 from refining it being buried via CCS, sometimes called blue hydrogen. I know a lot of acronyms, sorry about that. But today, there are less than 45 commercial CCS projects operating worldwide, and they have a combined capacity to capture barely 50 million tons of CO2 annually. Yep, that's about 0.1% or less of the roughly 37 billion tons of annual CO2 that is spewing the atmosphere from industry. According to the International Energy Agency, an inconceivable 32 billion tons of carbon capture would need to be out there to capture the CO2 that is going out by 2050 if we're going to limit climate change to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Whew! Not only would powering this amount of carbon capture exceed the total global electricity demand currently, it would also require over $3.5 trillion in annual investments up to 2050, along with the build-out and construction of hundreds of thousands of kilometers or miles of new dedicated CO2 pipelines to take captured CO2 from the thousands of to-be-built CCS facilities and bury it somewhere. Essentially, relying on carbon capture to solve our emissions problem would require building out the entire existing oil and gas industry in 20-odd years, and then essentially running it in reverse. Sounds crazy, right? But nevertheless, in 2023, the European Union set a goal of having 50 million tons of CO2 storage capacity by 2030, and they are aiming to obligate emitters to make this happen in time. The UK has also likewise set a 30 million ton target by 2030. Problematically, outside of Norway, hardly a million tons of CO2 is being captured throughout all of Europe. Regardless, worldwide, there are hundreds of new CCS projects being built or in advanced planning. To be honest, CCS is one of my favorite subjects, one I've written about quite extensively over the years for the energy transition, and more lately with my writing partner Edward Donnelly for DSMOG. And on top of this, he and I both won a grant from the Journalism Fund EU to conduct a deep dive into carbon capture and its planned build-out throughout Europe. So look for that series to be published throughout 2024. For background, I'm going to link into the show notes some of the past stories I've written about CCS, including two I published in September for DSmog. But here is perhaps the most important part of the CCS story. Key to understanding carbon capture is how that CO2 is stored. What the tech backers rarely emphasize and what the media rarely spotlights is that by far and away, most of the carbon being captured today is stored in a way to produce more oil.
Huh?
Nope, not a joke. Of the approximately 50 million tons of CO2 now being captured annually, over 35 million is used to produce, to squeeze out more oil from the ground through a process industry calls Enhanced Oil Recovery, or EOR. Though there are several CCS operations in Norway, Australia, even in Iceland, the world's biggest projects are located in the United States, Canada, and Brazil, and by far and away, the majority of the CO2 they are capturing is being used for EOR. ExxonMobil, the world's largest private oil and gas major, is not only one of the pioneering EOR companies, it also proudly claims to have the most experience with CCS or carbon management than anybody else. At least 5% of daily U.S. oil production is generated by injecting CO2 into declining or otherwise depleted oil and gas fields, or oil fields in this case. So that means over 600,000 barrels a day out of the U.S. alone is being produced from CO2 that is being captured from somewhere. And an increasing amount of global production, global oil production, at least 2 to 3% more on top of what's happening in the U.S., is coming from using CO2 for EOR. Still, less than 10% of global oil production, but the truth of it is, all that has stopped industry from doing more enhanced oil recovery has been the lack of a steady stream and steady supply of CO2. And as we turn to carbon capture and storage as a climate solution, they're about to get exactly that steady stream of CO2. CCS is a complicated subject. For this episode, we are going to talk with David Schlissel, Director of Resource Planning Analysis for the Institute of Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, or IEFA, an attorney and consultant and one of IEFA's founders. For decades, David has served as an expert witness before regulatory commissions in more than 35 U.S. states and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. I started our interview a few months ago by asking David if it's true that most captured CO2 is really being used to produce more oil.
Yes, 73% of the CO2 that's been captured in recent years has been used for enhanced oil recovery, which means that the CO2 is compressed and injected underground to force out oil that otherwise either wouldn't be recoverable or would be very difficult to recover.
Essentially, when you have an oil deposit, you have primary development, which means you extract oil using the native pressure underground, and that pushes the oil to the surface. Then oftentimes producers will go back again and quote-unquote re-stimulate that deposit, repressurize it to get more oil out, so-called secondary development. But then most producers leave and go on to the next find. What that means, though, is that in many oil fields, something like 40 to 60% of the oil that was underground prior to discovery remains there. Industry calls those then depleted oil fields. One of the most effective ways to get lots of that remaining oil, residual oil, to the surface is through so-called tertiary development like EOR, enhanced oil recovery, particularly by injecting CO2 into it. There are other forms of EOR, no doubt. Polymers, methane is produced, is used even in certain situations. Water flooding works too. But the most effective way to get residual remaining oil out of these reservoirs is by injecting CO2 under pressure into it. Oil companies started doing this 50 years ago in the early 70s back in Texas.
And all along, to some extent, they've been using natural deposits, the CO2 from natural deposits in the ground, to squeeze out as much oil as they can from underground.
Rule of thumb is that for about every 1 metric ton of CO2 that is injected underground, you force up another 2 barrels of oil.
It depends on where you're doing it. I've seen numbers that in some places you can get 3 to 4 barrels of oil. A barrel of oil produces roughly 0.44% of a metric ton of CO2. So if you're producing and burning a little over 2 barrels of oil, you are basically recreating the metric ton that you've used to create the new barrels of oil. The numbers are a little sketchy, but it's fair to say that a significant portion of the CO2 that's captured and otherwise would have been emitted into the atmosphere gets emitted by the additional CO2 from the burning of the extra oil that's produced through EOR.
That explains why nearly every time I've asked folks from the oil and gas industry about this, they try to move away from the EOR conversation. And on top of that, it's not at all clear that the facilities that do carbon capture, regardless of how they store their CO2, it's not at all clear that they are grabbing 100% of the CO2 that they are producing.
Projects are generally have been promoted as they capture 90% or more of the CO2 that they produce. Generally, supporters of carbon capture talk about how much is captured, but they don't talk about how much these plants produce. Capturing 40 million tons is good performance if these 30 projects, or how many, are producing 32 million tons. So capturing 30, so there's only 2 million going in the air. It's not so good if they're producing 70 million tons of CO2. So there's a lot still going into the air. We don't see that data, or I should say we only see it for a couple of projects. And for those, they have not achieved the 90% goal.
So we really don't know how much CO2 is actually being captured, even though the majority of CCS projects are either attached to a gas-fired power plant, a gas refinery, or a coal-fired power plant?
No, I got to correct you there. There are none attached to gas-fired power plants. Generally, it's gas processing, so that they take natural gas that's produced and clean up the impurities that are in it, like the CO2, and then pipe it off for use somewhere else. There were 2 coal plants, one in Texas in the U.S. and one in Saskatchewan in Canada, that for 3.5 years, roughly, 3 1/3 years, were capturing CO2 and using it for enhanced oil recovery. The carbon capture facility called Petra Nova was shut down in Texas at the end of April, early May of 2020.
Now, I should note, since we recorded this, Petra Nova, starting in September, late September 2023, is back online and capturing CO2. Nevertheless, the facts that David relates are still accurate.
It was an existing large power plant, roughly 610 megawatts of capacity. And Petra Nova is capturing the CO2 from roughly 40% of the flue gas coming out of W.A. Parish Unit 8 facility owned by a company called NRG. This is outside of Houston. It was a demonstration project. It cost $1 billion. The U.S. government put in $160 million. The industry touts Petra Nova as a great success for showing that carbon capture, or capturing 90% or more of the CO2 produced by a plant, can be captured. They produced a final study for the U.S. Department of Energy that proponents of CCS says, well, it's a DOE study, but it wasn't. It was a study by NRG for the DOE. And to no surprise, NRG claimed their project was successful. Only the numbers they put into their report don't allow you to reach that conclusion. The key metric for a carbon capture project is obviously how much CO2 it captures in tons, but also as important is its capture rate. What percentage of the CO2 it produces does it capture? And while for Petranova they claimed how many tons of CO2 they had captured, they didn't indicate how efficient it was. They just claimed it captured 93%, I think, or 92.7% of the CO2 that was treated by the carbon capture facility or processed through it. But they didn't tell you how many tons were processed through it. So you can't verify that their 93% is accurate.
Indeed, there were a lot of questions about how often the project ran. There were many technical challenges to Petranova, and the CCS plant itself was often down. But to power the CCS project, they actually built another dedicated power unit.
Even though the facility or the unit it's attached to is a large coal unit, they built a dedicated combustion turbine to run the carbon capture equipment. The carbon capture equipment requires a lot of power to run it, and it's called a parasitic load because that power is not otherwise available to sell into the market because it's needed to run the carbon capture equipment and other internal plant equipment. And they didn't capture the CO2 from that turbine, and they did not, when they talk about capturing 92% of this CO2, they don't include the CO2 from the combustion turbine that powered the project. They don't include the methane that was emitted during the mining of the coal that was burned. They don't include the fact that the captured CO2 was used for enhanced oil recovery. Even if you accept their 90% or 92% capture rate, if you add in just the combustion turbine, that drops down to about 75 to 80% capture rate.
Though it's not quite clear how much carbon they were capturing, what we do know is that none of what's been reported includes the CO2 stemming from the oil Petranova was producing through EOR and then is later burned.
Correct. I mean, they produced 5,000 barrels of oil a day, I think is the number, on average. And that oil, when burned, would produce slightly less than a metric ton of CO2.
Officially, during Petranova's operation from 2016 through 2020, it captured roughly 3.8 million tons of CO2. Though critics like David question its success at actually capturing CO2, unquestionably Petranova excelled at producing more oil. Captured CO2 is compressed, transported via an 81-mile pipeline, and then injected into the West Ranch oil field in Jackson County, Texas. During Petranova's first run, captured CO2 used for EOR caused production there to jump from 300 barrels a day to at times more than 6,000 barrels a day. And while the plant succeeded at capturing less than 4 million tons of CO2, that CO2 helped produce another 4.2 million or more barrels of oil. And when Petranova shuttered, it wasn't because of any real failures to capture CO2. It was because low oil prices made running the plant uneconomical. Let's talk a little bit about another benchmark project, Boundary Dam in Canada. It's also attached to a coal-fired power plant.
It was originally supposed to capture 90% of the CO2 it produced. That dropped to 85% pretty soon. Then the goal dropped to 65% of the CO2 it produced. By our calculations, it's capturing somewhere between 50 and 55% of the CO2 that it produces.
And the CO2 that Boundary Dam captures then goes for enhanced oil recovery as well.
Some portion is stored underground without EOR, but they do sell a lot for EOR.
So just next door to Alberta in their oil field.
Yes.
David, you're not selling me so far on CCS being a climate-saving concept.
Well, you're smart. You're paying attention. The claim of proponents is that you'll capture the CO2, you'll pipe it somewhere, and you'll put it underground where it will stay permanently. That's what they claim. And we say the technology has failed to achieve its goals in many projects, that it will be very expensive to do this, that it will have to be monitored for leaks for hundreds of years, and that you have, fourth is you have to do a life cycle analysis. Because when the natural gas, assuming you're going to run, it's for natural gas-fired power plant, there's, you use the term, which is the correct term, fugitive emissions from production, which means that some of the methane goes into the air rather than into pipes. Same thing, there's leakage from piping to the power plant. You need to do a life cycle analysis, upstream and downstream emissions. I've been critical of the U.S. Department of Energy, even under the Biden administration, for their desire to promote CCS so quickly, because they see it as a necessary to decarbonize the world. And I just think it's a gimmick technology to keep the natural gas, coal, and oil industries going.
But there's another reason why these types of projects are so popular in the U.S. and why so many more are being planned there. In 2022, President Biden and his administration and Congress approved the Inflation Recovery Act, or IRA, which gives $391 billion in funds earmarked for new energy development and to fight climate change. And Biden and much of the media has said that this is the largest green energy subsidy in the world, or in world history. But there's also a lot of money and special tax breaks in there for carbon capture. In fact, expanded and higher tax breaks under something called 45Q for both carbon that is captured and sent into geological storage, and also EOR is there. They're getting a lot more money. So now Exxon and others will get more money to produce more oil.
Right. You've got it. The old 45Q that's now been superseded by a revised 45Q, and that refers to the section of the IRS code. The credit was $50 per metric ton of CO2 stored underground, $35 per metric ton for every ton that was used for enhanced oil recovery.
So $50 a ton for geological storage and $30 a ton for EOR.
Right. And now it's gone to $85 per metric ton for geologic storage and $60 per metric ton for enhanced oil recovery.
So I took a look recently at sales prices for West Texas crude oil, or crude oil that falls under or is sold under that benchmark. Prices did jump to over $90 a barrel in September of 2023 and are now back down to over 70 odd plus. But let's say I'm an oil company and I can earn about $70 per barrel. Using EOR, I can probably produce 2 barrels of oil for every metric ton of CO2 I put underground. So that's $140. And then I add another $60 more on top of that. So I'm Exxon, and you're telling me, rough estimate of course, that I have the potential of using CCS attached to EOR to make around $200 for every metric ton of CO2 I put underground, right?
That's correct. You have no incentive to stop producing oil or CO2. My colleague Dennis Wamsted, who works with me on the carbon capture, we refer to power plants that would be converted to have carbon capture as CO2 factories, that the production of electricity is secondary. The real point is to produce and capture as much CO2 as possible because of the revenues coming from the 45Q credits. And as you describe it, using it for enhanced oil recovery just increases the amount of money they would get, assuming oil prices remain high. These power plants will become CO2 factories, and their owners will get a lot of money for the CO2 they capture, so that they will make profits even if they capture a far less than they claim they will capture.
David and I have to confess, spent about 2 hours chatting about CCS for this podcast. The topic is just so big and complicated. And there's still so much more that could be addressed, like CCS's role in hydrogen production and how CCS is evolving outside of North America. But for that, we'll just have to do other podcasts, as we're getting just too close to time here. Now, personally, first of all, thanks, David, for spending time with me and explaining all this. I totally understand why he and others and other critics of carbon capture see it as a false solution in terms of how it could or will help solve the longer-term climate crisis. But it's definitely not a crazy idea. Carbon capture is definitely not a crazy idea if you are looking at it from the perspective of the oil and gas industry, which we should note has been the driving force behind a lot of this conversation. To be fair, in Europe, a lot of the debate and the regulations that are being developed around CCS, officially at least, are about industrial decarbonization, so putting it onto cement or steel or concrete or other plants, and not about using CO2, the captured CO2, for EOR. Though, as we investigate further, it's not at all altogether impossible. In fact, a lot of the CO2 that's going to be captured will be stored in so-called depleted oil and gas fields. And those barrels of oil, as we know, are just sitting there waiting to be produced. All that is preventing that oil from coming to the ground or coming out of the ground and up to the surface are some very thin paper barriers and public pressure, which is where you, dear listeners, come in. I want to thank all of you who've tuned in and stayed tuned in to this CCS podcast. You have been listening to the Energy Transition Podcast, a product of the Heinrich Böll Stiftung's Energy Transition Platform. Thanks to the Energy Transition team in the EU office in Brussels. And thanks also for Gita for your amazing edits and for putting all this together. From lively Malasaña in Madrid, I wish you all smooth sailing on what could be rough seas ahead. Until